you know, the kid that we really want to reach is the kid who's, you know, borderline thinking like, science isn't really for me. I'm not really into it. But who can be made to understand that this is actually really cool and it's really necessary for our future, and it's something that we need to support, even if you don't go into a lab yourself.
Welcome to Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I'm your host and chief goddess of the PASS Foundation, Annalise Corbin. We know the current model for education is obsolete. It was designed to create fleets of assembly line workers, not the thinkers and problem solvers needed today. We've seen the innovations that are possible within education, and it's our goal to leave the box behind and reimagine what education can look like in your own backyard. Welcome to Learning Unboxed. This is your host, Annalise Corbin. And as always, I am super excited to talk with another great innovator in the transformative education space. And joining us today is Marshall Escamilla, co-host and music creator for Tumble Podcast. So Marshall, welcome to Learning Unboxed.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
I'm super excited again to be able to have the conversation. It's always great to talk to other podcasters, especially folks doing really cool things. So with that in mind, let's set us a bit of context for our listeners as we get started here. Tumble Podcast is a science podcast for kids to be enjoyed by the entire family. They tell stories about science discoveries with the help of scientists. And Tumble has two beliefs at their core. First, if kids understand how science works, the future will be a better place. We can all applaud that. And second, let's just make more podcasts for kids. The driving motivation for Tumble is the fact that there are people in positions of power who do not understand science as a process. And so Tumble Podcast hopes to help scientific literacy in the community by having their target audience as children. What's not to love about that? So 100,000 foot view first here, Marshall. So, okay, I understand the premise, but really what was the aha moment? I mean, what was the thing that said, you know what? It's now. We have to do this thing.
Well, it was a really interesting time because it was 10 years ago that we started the podcast, kind of in the wake of, you know, Serial and the podcast explosion and sort of, you know, podcast audiences growing so much. And my wife, Lindsay, and I, we just had our first son, and we're kind of in that transitional phase when you have a little baby and you have your, you know, your whole schedule is flipped upside down and, you know, you have no idea what you're going to do with your time. And she came home one day. She'd had a career as a science journalist, and she just came home from work one day and was like, you know, there aren't really any good nonfiction podcasts for kids that are doing science the way that, you know, we'd really like to. I mean, at that point, Brains On did exist, and they are an excellent science podcast for kids. But outside of that, there wasn't much going on in the podcast for kids space. And she had the expertise to do it well. And, you know, we'd both had lots of conversations about how science education in a lot of ways leaves kids not understanding what science is or how it works. And I have a career as an educator. At that point, I was a teacher and I had been teaching for a long time and sort of envisioned that my whole career would be in the classroom until I probably died. I don't know if I'd retire. but, you know, we were both really passionate about this idea of science because we'd both come to science as adults. You know, when I left high school, I was like, oh, science is dumb and boring, and you know, all these scientists think they know all the answers, but they don't know anything. And it wasn't really until I got into adulthood, and particularly with education, where the principal would come home every day with a new idea that, you know, suddenly we all had to execute. And I started asking, like, has anyone studied that these do what they say they do? And that was the point where I really, I think, started to learn the value of science as a process. So anyway, we were both really excited about that, and we just decided to start making the show. And so we did. And it was pretty apparent pretty early on that there was a hunger for what we were making, at least, you know, entertaining, high-quality educational audio content for kids. And you know, we got a reasonably big audience relatively soon. And it became pretty clear after a couple of years that, you know, maybe I wasn't just going to teach until I died. Mm-hmm. So, and that maybe this was something that could become a second chapter.
I love that very much. And the thing that I love the most about it is just the idea of thinking about something very differently, and the real need, right, for students to be able to engage in content in a different way. You know, I think that from a traditional education standpoint, and I chuckled, you know, numerous times as you're talking about, you know, dying, you know, as you're teaching, right? But the reality, and my entire family, my background is all in education. You know, both my parents were teachers, aunts and uncles were teachers. I remember being that kid growing up, right, with all these educators in and around. And, you know, and I do think that there is this trend as educators for us to desperately need to be the expert in the room. And it becomes very difficult, I think, depending on the environment in which you're teaching, right? You know in your heart as an educator, because most educators went into the field because they very much wanted to teach. They wanted to share in the shaping of learning, right? There's a passion that's inherent in that. And yet we tend to lose that passion in the system, right, that is around us, right? And that's not fair to us as the individual that came to it with joy, right, in our hearts and souls. And yet, right, we know we can be processed to death as adults. So one of the things I love about this space, right, the ecosystem that's been created through Tumble and work that's similar to it, is the fact that it's allowing the students to be able to think, right? So you're providing an opportunity and experience, right? And you're also providing learning in a different format than is in the traditional sort of gathering. So I really, really like that. So talk with us a little bit about the way the program works, right? And so, because it could be so many things, right? It could be an introduction to science. It could be a supplement to science. You know, I've listened to several of the episodes, right? There's so many things that you could do with it as a family, as a kid who loves to listen to it, as an educator who could bring it into their classroom. So talk a little bit about the opportunity there.
Well, sure. I mean, just in terms of, you know, what we're trying to do with our episodes, every episode is telling a story of science discovery. So It's really important for it to be an episode of Tumble. There has to, A, be a story, and B, there has to be discovery. So every single episode is focused around kind of a question that a scientist had and what they did to find the answer. And, you know, some of my favorite things are all these like just crazy weird things that scientists do that turn out to be actually pretty serious science. But when you hear about them, they just sound ridiculous. Like In our episode about sloths, we had someone who had to custom sew backpacks for sloths to wear. That was what she had to do to find out the answers to the questions that she was seeking answers to. So anyway, in terms of the actual like creation of one of our episodes, we always try to focus around what's the question, what's the process, what's the answer, and what does that tell us about science as a way to learn? So, you know, connecting that to what educators might be doing in the classroom, we've actually been working on a couple of grant-funded projects with our show that are investigating a couple of different things when it comes to utilizing our podcast in the classroom. One project that we're actually in the midst of wrapping up, and I have some very serious deadlines I need to attend to after this recording session. But we've been studying the use of our podcast as kind of an inclusive tool for blind and low vision students. So we're looking at sort of both what if they're listening to episodes of our show that happen to feature blind and low vision scientists, and is that impacting their concept of what blind and low vision people can accomplish? And we're also looking at what are ways that our podcast can be used just as a way of delivering science knowledge and science literacy in a classroom setting. On top of that, we are looking at what does it look like if students use our podcast as a model to create their own? So we've kind of been building out this whole podcast creation curriculum, and we've created a podcast creator tool for elementary kids that's as stripped down and privacy controlled as it's possible to be.
I love that, by the way. I'm going to stop right there because that is so awesome, so needed, and super cool. So I absolutely hope people will take a look at that.
Yes. Yes. I believe the website's makeclassroompodcast.com, but let me just check that real quick.
We will verify, and then we will add these links to the show notes, the podcast link and whatnot. But that is super awesome, right? Because as we know, finding ways, alternative ways, non-traditional assessment ways to get to a student's understanding and knowledge, right, is incredibly powerful. And it gives students such agency, mm-hmm. right? There's kids that are going to be super interested, and I want to make a podcast, right? I listen to this. Well, I could do this too. And I could take any topic that you need to share with me, and I can turn it into this thing to demonstrate how much I know, or better yet, how well I can ask questions, or how curious am I about something. I love that.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, having students speak extemporaneously in their own voice, I think, is mm-hmm. a great way to assess what they know. And there's something we've learned by visiting classrooms, that a podcast in a lot of ways is like a presentation. It's very similar to, you know, I'm doing my research about koala bears and standing in front mm-hmm. of the class and telling everybody everything I know and everything I looked up. But it's a very different kind of student that will thrive in a podcasting space. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I shouldn't say different kind of student, but there are certain students that will not thrive with a presentation, but that will if you give them the opportunity to make their own podcast.
100%. Yes.
Yeah. And it's, you know, the ability to listen back to what you did. I mean, we've done sessions with kids where they, you know, the end of the session is they make a podcast trailer. Mm-hmm. And just the amount of immediate feedback about their speaking and listening that they get from recording themselves and then just playing it back just that much, they can think like, yeah, I didn't speak very clearly there. Maybe I should do it again. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the kind of thing that in a presentation or in a live setting, that feedback is harder to give in a way that makes sense to the kids. You know what I mean? It's like...
Can be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you can give the feedback, but then they have to remember what they did and go back and try to do something
right.
different, as opposed to hearing a recording where they have an objective measure of what they did.
Right, right. It's very much like an art show gallery, right? Or that mm-hmm. sort of approach, right? Because you have the opportunity to revisit the product. I can listen to it over and over again. I could listen to... you know, one piece of it numerous times if I really want to drill down and understand, in the same way that I can walk back up to that piece of art. I can shift right. I can shift left. I can look at it from a slightly different angle. I can look at it in a different piece of light, and it's going to tell me something different.
Yeah.
You know, and it allows our students also to draw in on a whole array of their sort of senses that they can draw in, and not just the traditional way we think about, you know, our senses, but all of the other sort of shared and collected knowledge that those students have gathered up along the way. And even in our youngest students, right, they're going to bring all of that to bear. And so I do really, really love the element of that approach. So thank you for that.
Are you ready to join the movement to revolutionize education? Stay tuned for the full unveiling of my forthcoming book, Hacking School, 5 Strategies to Link Learning to Life, where we'll dive deeper into these topics and unlock key strategies to educational transformation. If you want to stay in the know, sign up for notifications at pastfoundation.org/hackingschool.
I'm also really intrigued about the way you work with the scientists, because I think that there's another lesson here, right? So oftentimes, right, in a traditional educational system, we really struggle with how to bring people into our learning environment, whatever it looks like, however you define that, right, in a meaningful and purposeful way, something that is beyond simply show and tell or career day. And so I think that that's the other really valuable lesson that Tumble can actually give back in, because I'm super intrigued about the way you work with a scientist to really understand and craft the story that then becomes the lesson.
Well,
talk to us just a little bit about that. Not super, the super sauce, but I mean, think about the way that you do that, right? And whether it's the same every time. You think you come at this from a very, very particular set of objectives and lenses, I believe. Just from my listening, I'm seeing some of those sorts of trends that I could sort of pull the threads within the programs that I've listened to.
Yeah, I mean, I think the main focus, and I have to admit here, I'm not the scientist interviewer. That is Lindsay, the science journalist. So she could speak a lot more to this if you want to have her on your show sometime. But the essence is, you know, we always want to get at, like, we collect questions from our listeners and they ask all kinds of crazy science questions. And we always want to get at the way in which kids' questions are actually not all that different from the kinds of questions that scientists themselves are asking when they're out doing their research. So usually when we get a question from a kid, we try to find a scientist who has sort of the same basic research idea. And if the question happens to be like really simple and easy to answer, they might do that and then talk about what active research is going on right now. But that is always a key component, is we want to make sure that we're talking about something that scientists don't know yet. While there's lots of fun facts and whatnot that we share, like things that scientists do know, we always make the center of it being the thing that they don't know, that they're curious about and that they're trying to find out. Because that was always the piece in our own science education that seemed to be missing.
Yeah. So you're really, really taking, you're taking this from a collective set of facts, things that we need to know or things that we do know that we have learned over time. And you're turning it instead into all the things that we could know if we just ask a different set of questions, right?
Yeah. And I think like a lot of that was important to us in making the show. Just because we felt like, you know, when we were taught in K-12 in particular, it was sort of everything you needed to know was in the book. And if you didn't know the stuff in the book, then that just meant you weren't good at science. And the limitations of science were what was contained in the book. And, you know, I don't want to poo-poo knowledge, because knowledge is really important. It is really important that kids get knowledge. But there's a little bit too much of an emphasis on learn all this stuff, know all this stuff, and not enough about, did you know that there's still things scientists don't know, that there's still frontiers of knowledge that are not yet understood, and basic things that are not really all that well understood. And I think just having that moment of wonder and questioning and the understanding that scientists are just trying to figure stuff out is something that we really wanted to make sure our audience got.
I'm curious, what do kids want to know? What do you hear, since you hear from your audience, right? So what do they want to know?
Oh, what do they want to know? I can give you some real examples. Hold on a second.
Yeah, please do, because that's priceless, right? You know, and it's really funny. So my background, my listeners know this. You know, I'm an anthropologist, but more specifically, I'm an underwater or archaeologist or maritime archaeologist. And so anytime I, you know, normal sort of thing, you know, you've conversations with kids, you know, there's this whole list of things that you know they're going to ask. It's going to be the first five things they ask. And then after that, you're going to get to the good stuff. But you have to get the stuff that they innately always want to know. It doesn't matter what you're talking about underwater. They want to know how you feel about a shark, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be question number one, right? You know, and like I said, eventually they'll get to the really important parts, right? Like, well, how do you hold your breath that long, right? You know, things like that. Or how does that work? What do you mean about pressure? Well, that's where you want them to go, right? But they're going to start with that other stuff. So I'm super curious, you know, in the feedback loop that you have established, what are kids telling you that they want to know more about?
Oh, man. Well, so we get about, I want to say between 3 to 10 emails per week from kids.
It's awesome.
It's not a super, you know, given the size of our audience, it's not a super large number, but it's, you know, it's enough that I can reply to them all individually. So if any of your listeners become our listeners, just know kids will get answers from me sooner or later. But let's see, we have recent ones. Why do cats hate water? We get a lot of cat questions.
Really? A lot of cat questions.
A lot of cat questions. One kid, I thought this was a brilliant question, is why is underwear funny?
It's a good question.
It's a great question. Why do we think underwear's funny?
You could ask the same thing about why do boys think farts are funny, right? Why? But those are great questions.
What would happen if we had no water? Why is the pyramid triangle shaped? Can robots think like humans? Why do male lions sleep while female lions hunt for food? Can you weigh your head without cutting it off? We'd like to know more about tickling. Why, when you are tickled in a ticklish spot, do you have to laugh? What makes tickling work? Why can humans be tickled but dogs can't?
Interesting. Okay, that kid I want to meet. That was a very in-depth question. So then what do you do with these questions? So how do things like this then inform the choices that you make in terms of where you're going to spend time, energy, and effort to produce the next show?
Sure. Well, so we can make between 16 and 18 episodes a year. That's about our max. So, you know, if we're getting 3 to 10 questions per week, there's a lot we have to ignore.
Right.
Or at least not make episodes into. We're thinking about having an episode over the summer where we just go through all the good questions that can't become episodes because they don't engender stories. But usually, you know, when we're brainstorming our next season, there's always, you know, I mean, Lindsay's a science journalist, so she gets all the updates about what scientists are up to. So she's always got some idea of some like news stories that are coming about. There's also knowledge about like what things are out there that would make a good episode and what things that are we interested in. And then we always sort of go to the kid question database and see, are there good questions in here that, you know, we could bring to specific researchers if we want to talk to them, or just good questions that are really interesting and make a good question that we haven't covered, you know, already. So there's always sort of a recursive process of like things we want to talk about. Sometimes when we have grant funding, we have things that we specifically need to talk about, and just spontaneous questions that we get from kids.
Yeah. I love that. And I appreciate that you're able to answer so many of them. Let's talk just a little bit about sort of the flip side of the work. So, because I really love the idea of being able to not just utilize a podcasting format as a mechanism for teaching. So the content element, the curiosity around the scientific questions and trying to understand the different episodes that you're putting together. But from the science side of this, I'm curious about that piece of the conversation as well, right? Because the scientists are getting something back out of this as well, more than just being able to have the conversation. And what my hope is that the scientific community at large is seeing an opportunity to have a more informed, I want to say, citizenship, right? I mean, when we think about science is under attack worldwide, right? And from a variety of different fronts in many ways, right? And so when we step back and sort of think about what's going on in the world and the need for people to be able to grab information, to figure out what information is true, what's factual about it, or what questions I should be asking about the information that's out there in the world, and where and how we should be investing time, energy, effort, and treasure, quite frankly, in terms of the things that we're going to study moving forward, right? We need great citizens and people who can think. And we're struggling with that collectively on a global scale right now, right? It's not even just about us. And so I'm super curious if you've had the opportunity to sort of glean anything from your scientific guests about the need or the urgency around helping kids be better scientists or have appreciations for science in and of itself.
Yeah, I mean, I think the main thing from our guests is that they believe that what we're doing is pretty important, that sharing this information with kids is pretty key to having future generations that are just, to be honest, able to function in the world that we're building. I think, you know, if we're not discerning consumers of information or interested in investigating the truth or falsehood of things we find. I mean, you know, forget about it, right? We're all just swarmed with information nonstop. And I think developing the tools to understand what is quality and what isn't is, I think, the main challenge that this younger generation and honestly, even adults today are facing. So I don't know if that answers the question all that well, but I think that's the best I have at the moment.
Well, like I said, you know, I'm deeply suspicious is not the right word, but I suspect, right? I suspect that that would be how the majority of your guests would sort of feel about what's going on, right? That we desperately need to get young people to be interested and invested in a very broad array of topics, subjects, and fields of science, right? We ultimately need these people to grow up to be supportive of, you know, our national parks, wherever we happen to be in the world, right? The environmental opportunities that we have, you know, the opportunities around, you know, curing disease and so on and so forth, right? But these are all very, very complex topics. And in a world where technology is advancing at a pace we've just, unlike anything we've ever seen before, how do we balance out the sort of just the stuff that's being fed to the public versus the understanding of what's possible from that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's absolutely the case. And I think that's absolutely what's driving us to do what we do. Our main objective actually isn't to have our listeners grow up to become scientists someday, though if some of them do, that's great. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the kid that we really want to reach is the kid who's, you know, borderline thinking like, science isn't really for me. I'm not really into it. But who can be made to understand that this is actually really cool and it's really necessary for our future. And it's something that we need to support, even if you don't go into a lab yourself. Mm-hmm. Just being, I don't know, an accountant for a grocery store chain who understands how science works. Like, that's great. That is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And that's everything that we want.
Right. 100%. And I think that the other thing that's really intriguing, I guess, if you will, especially for these kids, the potential to figure out that there is science in everything. Because so many kids, right, have this idea that science is just that odd person in a lab doing a thing all by themselves, right? Mm-hmm. And yet we know it's so much more than that. And in fact, there's science in almost everything we do, we touch, we see, we experience. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the other really great opportunity is that all these kids can, in fact, be scientists. And they actually are. They just don't know it. And whether you tap into, hey, you know, I'm going to grow up and be interested in marketing, or I'm going to grow up and be interested in and become an applied research scientist, you know, in chemistry of something, the reality is there's room and space for both of those pieces and parts. And how do we get kids sparked to see that potential?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the tack that we've taken in that is to try to make every episode as fun and entertaining as we possibly can, and to make sure that everything's, you know, weaved through with a pretty strong sense of humor. Mm-hmm. So I think that works.
It absolutely works, right? You wouldn't hear from so many kids if that were not the case. And, you know, when you come out with the episode about why is underwear funny, you're going to actually have a huge hit right there for sure. So as we wrap up the conversation here, Marshall, what was your favorite aha?
Oh, my favorite aha. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my role on the show is I am the proxy for the learner. Mm-hmm. We have two co-hosts, and Lindsay, my wife, is the interviewer, and she basically comes with, I had this conversation with a scientist, and I'm prepared to tell you this story. And I'm the one who asks the questions that move the narrative along. Mm-hmm. And one thing that is real is I pretty much never read our scripts until we're recording it. Mm-hmm. Because we want to have my reactions be authentic and surprising, like I am learning something new for the first time. So every single episode, I learn something new and amazing that I didn't know before. And, you know, we've now done like, what, 180, 190 episodes. So that's like, I could go through every single one and tell you what what it is I learned that was so amazing. I mean, I don't know, I could rattle some off. Like, I learned that every koala's first meal is its mother's own poop. That's something I learned. That was a pretty wild aha.
Yeah, who would have ever thought, right? Yeah.
Who would have thought? But it turns out to be really important because they need to develop a very particular gut microbiome or else they won't be able to eat the eucalyptus.
Yeah.
Or the particular eucalyptus species that they need to eat. And that's how they do it. You know, one of my favorites was we've somehow done like a lot of episodes about researchers who put on plays for dogs.
Interesting. Okay.
There's two that come to mind. One is, you know, the researcher was trying to investigate how friendly dogs were. You know, they were investigating like the Lassie phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
So if a human was in trouble with their dog, what would their dog do? How would their dog react to the trouble? And so they sort of created this, you know, staged scenario where a human goes in with their dog and has a bookshelf fall onto them. And then they took tape to see what the dogs did. And the answer is the dogs didn't do anything.
Yeah, the dogs didn't care. They're like, why are we playing this game?
They were like, weird.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
But like, I've seen all these videos and like you see this person walking in and then the bookshelf falls on top of them and they're trapped. And the dog's just like, interesting scenario. I guess I can sniff now.
Yeah. I love that. Who would have guessed, right? That's the beauty of it.
You know, and I think like they did say the caveat, like maybe if it were a real emergency, a dog could detect that and like they could tell that this was all fake. I don't know. There's some additional layer. But it's just, you know, that's just one of the many kind of like hilarious things that scientists do to find out about the world.
It is. That's true. And it's the beauty.
Yeah. And we did another one where they were trying to test like whether dogs preferred friendly or unfriendly people. And so they put on a play where a human was, the researcher locked himself into a dog kennel and was trying to reach a clipboard. And someone came over and moved it out of his reach. And then someone else came over and moved it into his reach so he could get it. All while a dog was watching.
Oh, interesting. Very, very interesting.
And they tried to see, like, who would the dog take the treat from? And it turned out dogs do prefer the person who helped.
That's fascinating as well.
Yeah.
Although I would think treat is treat, right? You know, at the end of the day, right?
Treat is treat.
Treat is treat.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Well, Marshall, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to talk with us and to share about Tumble Podcast and the work that you do and the way that the show works. I think that people will be fascinated, and I hope that you will check it out and give the show a listen. It is a lot of fun. I've enjoyed listening to the episodes that I've had been able to get through. And so I really love the storytelling way that it's all pulled together and formatted. So I really enjoy that. And we'll make sure that there's information in the show notes with some links to some of the different things that we talked about today. So again, thank you, Marshall, very much for making time to chat with us today.
Yeah, thank you. It's been wonderful to be here.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us for Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I want to thank my guests and encourage you all to be part of the conversation. Meet me on social media at Annalise Corbin, and join me next time as we stand up, step back, and lean in to reimagine education.